Welcome to The Softer Side of Finance, a weekly show where Anders Leo Lindberg explains how the finance function can create more value through the human dimensions of people, organisation and culture, with a global audience on LinkedIn Audio. Recorded as a live session, anyone can join in. Raise your hand and the stage is yours. Fancy joining Anders? Head over to LinkedIn and sign up for the next event. For now, here's what you've missed so far.
Welcome back to The Softer Side of Finance. Today's title is Who's Giving Feedback on Your Strategy? My name is Anders Leo Lindberg, and I'll be your host as usual. Today's show is part of a larger series called The 10 Commandments of Planning and Forecasting. We'll also later on be publishing the Planning and Forecasting Manifesto, where you can read everything about the 10 commandments and how to implement them in your company. I'll be going through an article from some time back called Without an Effective Feedback Loop, Your Strategy and Plan Will Fail. And I'll stop at key points to see if anyone wants to join me on stage. So let's get started. You have a plan, and you know it's a good plan. Future is bright, and the strategic milestones of business growth glittering on the horizon. But what happens when you find the path blocked and the milestones out of sight? If there's no way to move past the blockage, the plan has failed. Can you find a new route to the prize? And should you have been aware of the impending change to the business environment before grinding to a halt? Sounds very picturesque, doesn't it? Strategies, plans, and whatnot. In the same way that good satellite navigation crowdsources feedback to constantly update the route of your journey, a good plan will take feedback from the business operating environment and constantly evolve to nudge you in the right direction. Instead of careering ahead with the original plan, coming up against an intractable challenge and having to backtrack and contract, an effective feedback loop keeps the milestones in sight. The plan has already been created using feedback on your well-documented assumptions, which we talked about last week if you were here. So why should the feedback loop process stop when the journey is underway? Planning is not a single moment in time. It's continuous, a living document that uses a strong feedback loop to stay on track. Remember, the goal of the business is not to execute the plan as given. The goal is to reach those milestones. Or, put it another way, to realize the choices that you have made as a business as part of your strategy. That is what strategy is all about. Making choices about what will create most value for the business. A key challenge then is, you make the strategy, you cascade it, and then you wait. You wait for the actual results to come in, and then maybe 6 months later, you get an idea about if the strategy is on track or not. And that's, of course, too long. Okay, you shouldn't have a real-time dashboard necessarily that every second can tell you if your strategy is on track or not. Of course, we can allow a bit longer cycles there. But it's on finance and FP&A. To ensure that business leaders in the company always have a good view on if the company is on track with fulfilling the strategy, realizing the vision or not. And if they don't have that view, they're either going to be too late in making changes or they're going to miss opportunities that may arise. And that's not what we want as a business, because that's a losing strategy. Strategy is all about winning. So, of course, it raises the question, how do you best create a feedback loop? So, an effective feedback loop is based on measurable indicators, draws from different sources, and is acted upon. Now, it may be you get signals from your feedback process that shows you a bit off course and doesn't necessarily need to lead to action. But the thing was key is that anytime you get a signal that you're off course, big or small, it should raise the question in the conversation at least, should we act on this? Do we need to act on this? Or are we still comfortable continuing as is? So what kind of indicators can keep the business on track? You can consider a balanced scorecard, suggesting a heady mix of measurements around internal business processes, the development of the workforce, financial performance, customer acquisition and satisfaction, and technology sustainability, and supply chain indicators. There's definitely a lot to unpack here. Maybe using AI to analyze the data, reveal underlying trends, can help FP&A professionals to adjust the plan as soon as need is identified. You could even follow McKinsey's lead and do what's called an unbalanced scorecard. An unbalanced scorecard is tilting towards rewarding those that take risks, or at least not penalizing them as much if they fail, and putting a bigger pressure on those that don't take risk and pursue sort of the safe plan to really perform. Right? Because if you have a balanced scorecard, then probably no one is inclined to take any risks. And if you don't take any risks in business, you might find yourself out of the business. So balanced scorecards are great, but sometimes maybe not so much promoting of seeking new approaches and different ways. So acting on the information that you identify from the feedback loop is vital. Knowing that conditions have changed, yet carrying on in the hope that the original plan will prevail is worse than having no feedback loop at all. A great example of this can be seen among the hot versus hard investors in everything from stocks and shares to even cryptocurrencies. Market data and wider economic data are readily available. And the feedback loop is worrying all the time. When there's an indicator of a market crash, hot investors have an action point, a stop loss value at which they will sell their holdings to stop further losses. Hard investors may ride the lows, staying dormant until the market rises again, and the old plan is relevant again. Can a business afford to stop and wait for reality to match that plan? In my mind, at least, no business can afford this. No business. Because you have competitors, and these competitors, they continue to grind away. And maybe they don't all act. Maybe it's a slow-moving industry, but someone will. And the one that acts is likely to create more value than the one that doesn't act. And again, it's on finance, FP&A, to establish this feedback loop, to drive towards taking action for whatever reality throws at us. No company can afford to be the hard investor waiting for reality to turn towards them again. Because changes happen all the time, and it's in many ways unlikely that the world is going to go back to a stage it was in before. Take COVID, for instance. You could argue that, okay, now we don't have COVID anymore, so the world has returned to a previous state. But then not really, because then you have inflation. And you even have added political tensions. So there's always what we could term a next normal, at least that's what McKinsey does. There's always a next normal coming at us. So expecting that a previous normal returns is a losing strategy. So we gotta drive, force, maybe even senior leaders in the company to act. So let's talk about the impact of an effective feedback loop. Agility in the face of change has been thrown into sharp focus by the market disruption of COVID, supply chain challenges, the war in Ukraine, indicators of an impending recession. I don't think we have officially entered into recession yet, so we are still waiting for those. And the drive towards sustainability, or ESG, if you want, in a wider sense. Deloitte reported in March 2022 on some US companies, particularly semiconductor producers, used their feedback loops to minimize supply chain disasters, anticipating a potential invasions months before Russian forces went into Ukraine. They stockpiled essential materials in response to early feedback and planning at the US Department of the Interior. However, those companies that were slow to react to this data that was already out in the public domain found themselves with idle production lines. Think about that. Data suggests that a next normal is coming. And if this next normal realizes it itself, you're going to be in trouble if you do nothing. As finance and FP&A teams, we cannot let that happen. Now, we don't get to decide if we're going to act. That's for the CEO or other CXOs to decide that. We get to decide if we present this evidence for discussion, maybe even put forward recommendations on actions to take. That's on us. Now we can lean back and say, hey, perhaps someone else will do it. But they will not. Maybe not even waiting for us to do it, but they will not do it themselves. They continue because plan is the plan. And that's what we've been asked to deliver, right? So it's on finance and FP&A to put this evidence in front of decision makers and say, the next normal is coming. Early indicators suggests that we're off track. Some of these indicators are outside the confidence intervals for the assumptions we have established for our strategy, which suggests that our strategy is no longer a good strategy, at least not without adjustments. So we need to act. Because if you don't act, you might end up on the short end of the stick. In a longer term example, listening to early feedback from investors helped Starbucks to establish a strong plan and culture of sustainability through its supply chain before this was common in the industry. And it may have cost some money up front, it usually does, but probably now they're reaping the benefits. Consumers today are, maybe not 100% of the time, but definitely making choices based on sustainability. Investors are making choices based on sustainability. So most often, the signs are there early on. And any business school case study, be it Nokia, Blockbuster, Kodak, you've probably heard all of them. They all had early warning signs too, all of them. But they failed to act, or they decided not to act, or they misread the information presented to them. Any one of those would, of course, be what actually happened. I wasn't sitting in their boardroom or their senior management room by no means, but we've all heard the stories. And stories like that continue today. Companies that didn't act in time. It's on us in finance and FP&A to ensure that we act in time. That's what the effective feedback loop is all about. So as the economic downturn continues, which I believe it still does in most parts of the world, how strong is your feedback loop? What are the key sources of data and measures that keep your organization on a clear path towards its strategic goals? Now's a good time to come up and share. Just raise your hand, come on stage, share your perspectives, ask questions, join in the discussion. Hello, Christine. Welcome back to the stage. Good to have you here. Feel free to introduce yourself and share your perspective or ask questions.
Thank you. I appreciate you calling me on stage. My question has to do with, I guess, the fear, the apprehension of talking about these things. Because once you talk about it, then it's a reality that something could change and threaten the way we normally do business. I think it's a hard conversation to have with business stakeholders and other people unless they're prepared for it. Taking that initial step, giving them a warning like, hey, our health insurance company is possibly going to declare bankruptcy. I mean, that's something we should tell them, but they don't really want to hear it. So how do you mitigate this conversation?
That's a great call out and great question, Christine. I think it starts early on, right? So in this series here, we're talking about strategy and how finance and FP&A teams can be part of actually realizing the strategy and creating value for the company. So as you make a strategy, you will make assumptions for that strategy. I mean, you cannot know things about the future, so you have to make some assumptions. And for those assumptions, you will establish what I call confidence intervals, in which reality can move in between, and you still being comfortable that you have the right strategy. Finance and FP&A then needs to set up a measurement system that, in as close to real time as possible, of course, depending on how often data points are released, you will then release this information to decision makers. So as soon as one of the assumptions move outside this confidence interval, conversation should be had. And that process has been established as part of the strategy process, which means everyone is sort of on board with this, right? So everyone knows, okay, I can see we are off track. We should have a conversation. And of course, that conversation can lead in many different directions. Maybe action is not taking because we are happy with how things are going. Many things can happen there. But at least we have now established the process of this being the case. Now, the example that you mentioned, Christine, of course, could fall outside this, let's say, strategic way of thinking. So to me, it's critical that we build relationships with the stakeholders that we support and that we let them know the only reason we're here as finance professionals is to help them be successful. So if the health insurance company might declare bankruptcy, we would only bring that up because we know it's going to get these leaders into trouble and the company into trouble. And it's not for us to decide exactly what to do about it. We can lay out options. We can do the calculations to say, if it happens, what's going to be the impact for us? But we should definitely bring it up. And we are allowed and comfortable to bring it up because we have that relationship, because they trust us, because they know we're only there to help them. But of course, if we usually come at them saying, you're behind on the numbers, it's not good, you know, you need to do something and I'll check back in next month, and they don't feel we're there for them, then they probably won't listen to us. And then it will be uncomfortable to bring up these kind of cases. But if you have a good relationship, it should never feel uncomfortable to bring up these things. And good times, bad times, right? We need to go through both. And we need to be comfortable bringing these things to the table. Otherwise, as also implied in your question, of course, we could get into trouble. I hope that was at least gave some perspectives on the questions, Christine.
Thank you.
You are welcome. And not just this topic here today, but in general, the finance teams and how we are involved in strategy is a crucial topic for me. I've defined the mission of FP&A to drive the right strategic choices in the company. And we can only do that if we change our planning and forecasting practices and become more involved in the strategic process rather than just calculating numbers and putting out financial models. So I'm really trying to, you can say, pull the whole profession in one direction, out of the data and the numbers only, and really into this strategic, I would call it business partnering space, where we help senior leaders make the right choices, help them understand what are the choices, help them quantify the choices before them, and then work closely with the strategy team, if such a team exists in your company, for them to qualify the different options you have available. So there's lots for us to do in the world of strategy. And I can see Lucia is coming up as well, and Daniel is also coming up. Welcome to the stage, Lucia. Good to have you back. Feel free to introduce yourself and share your perspective, ask questions, and then we'll let Daniel go afterwards.
My name is Lucia Lotz-Angelozewski. I am a digital transformation leader in relation to people and culture in finance. I have about 20 years of finance, which reminds me, I probably shouldn't say that because it kind of gives out my age. Definitely an interesting topic. So thank you so much for bringing it up. One of the questions that I have often asked, especially my analyst team, when I take over either a business unit or region, whatever, the question that I have to my finance analyst team is, have you attended any strategic meetings? And I think that's where we have to push a little bit to our kind of change that culture, change that mindset. That it's not about us doing reporting, really changing the mindset that, hey, you have to invite yourself sometimes to those strategic discussions, understand more about the market, understand about production, understand about contingencies, what's going to happen in 5 years, in 10 years, and not be afraid to your topic to give that feedback. So I do think that is a change in mindset because of how finance under Excel models we have been seen as. So that was it. That was my comment.
Thanks a lot for sharing that, Lucia. And I fully agree. It's a mindset change for many finance people to push ourselves into those discussions. And to be fair, you know, when you start a new job on the first day, probably you don't go to the VP and say, hey, I need to be part of your strategy conversations. Maybe you need to work yourself through the motions of understanding the business and the data first, and then being part of a budgeting cycle or something like that. But once you've gone through those motions and sort of built that relationship, what I often found is that there's an open door. We are absolutely welcome in those meetings, but of course, they want to understand a bit first, you know, how we're going to contribute and everything. And that's what they see through working with us during a period of time. I've experienced this myself. I started as a new finance business partner for a team, and I could see they had sort of their own leadership team meetings and everything else. And at the beginning, I was like, I could force myself into those, but I wouldn't know what I should do and how I should contribute right away. So I'm going to just go through that period of building the relationships and establishing the trust. And some months later, when the leadership team expanded because of some business reorganization, I just went into the VP's office and said, hey, I should be a part of this team or the leadership team meeting, whatever it might be. He was like, yes, of course you should. Maybe we would have said the same thing in the beginning, but at least now I was dead sure I should be in here. So it's not necessarily just so easy just to be a part of it, but I 100% agree with you that we should and we should push for it. So thanks a lot for sharing that, Lucia. We also have Daniel on stage. Daniel, welcome back. Feel free to introduce yourself and then share your perspective or ask a question.
Well, thanks, Anders. It's great to be here as always. I'm a financial analyst. I'm currently working on education. I'm educating finance. I just want to share my previous experience in a company that I worked for previously. What we did was that we, after making relevant assumption tailored to the type of business that I was working in, we projected a model 5 years into the future, and then we used or make use of ratio analysis, different types of ratio analysis, performance ratios, financial leverage ratios, also benchmark analysis and those types of analysis to compare the performance of our company with similar companies in the industry. And that was my experience with financial analysis and planning. And also another thing that we missed at that point was to incorporate these black swan events. I think that's what referred to as these black swan events that might occur very rarely. I think in order to account for these types of events, we need to make use or leverage data pertaining to, you know, international politics and global business. I think we missed on that. But overall, I think when it comes to our ratio analysis and trend analysis, I think it depicted our performance, the performance of my company very well.
Thanks a lot for sharing your experiences, Daniel. And I think it was funny, Roger Martin, who was one of the gurus within strategy, he published an article on Medium not so long ago, where he said that benchmarking is the enemy of strategy. And the reason for that is that when you do strategy, you need to make choices about what you want to do in the future, and you need to outpace your competitors. So if you benchmark your strategy against them, you're going to find yourself in trouble, right? Because it's just going to be a self-fulfilling prophecy. But in terms of looking at actual performance, then you want to check, okay, are we actually performing better than competitors? And then benchmarking can be truly insightful. And on the black swan events, I guess it's difficult to incorporate them up front because then it wouldn't be a black swan event because you can't really know that it's coming. But you can definitely stress test your plans and say, okay, if something big like COVID or like something else were to happen again, what would that mean for our business? And what kind of mitigation or contingency plans to wait in the drawer to tackle those. So I think all good thoughts and suggestions there, Daniel. Thanks a lot for sharing those perspectives.
Thanks, Sonia.
All right, we are at the end of today's show. I want to thank Christine, Lucia, Daniel for coming up on stage. You guys are what makes this an entertaining and interesting show. And I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in. And we'll be back next week with another episode of The Softer Side of Finance. Thanks a lot for being here, and hopefully see you again next week. Bye for now, everyone.
You've been listening to The Softer Side of Finance, a weekly show recorded live on LinkedIn Audio. Don't forget to subscribe to stay updated on how the finance function can create more value. And why not join Anders every Monday on LinkedIn to share your own views and appear in the next episode?